It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. There is so much to talk about. Lots of new PCs from Computex. Qualcomm's new 850 chip designed for Windows Always Connected PCs. Microsoft buys GitHub. We've got an analysis of that and a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 573, recorded Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. Take off that sweater. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month and get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by Moogsoft. Reduce IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. Visit Moogsoft.com to learn more and sign up for a demo. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Redmond, Washington, home of Boeing, no, Microsoft Corporation. And on the Microsoft Skype network, Mr. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Ms. Mary Jo Foley of AllAboutMicrosoft.com, and a good day to you both. You have been on Taiwan time for the last couple of days, I'm guessing.
I was last
Not really, yeah.
Computex. Computex is, who puts this on and what's the point of it?
That's a good point. I don't know. Who does put it on?
Who does run Computex?
Yeah. But it turns out this is the PC trade show, really.
Yeah. You had made a comment before the show about this being better than CES, and I was sort of just thinking about that. I think that the point of Computex is that it's just PC, basically, right?
So, right. Yeah, this it's kind PC of like Comdex CES, used to be a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
So, Intel's 50th anniversary. Happy birthday, Intel. They're making an i9-8086, which I think is hysterical. I want one, though.
Yeah, they're giving them away, right? To some number of
8,000. Well, it's easy to remember. 8,086.
Yeah. 88.
No, it's 86, not 88.
86.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not the 8088. That was
H/16-bit.
Compromised.
Predecessor.
Chip.
Yeah.
Not even a predecessor.
That came out. Oh, really?
They had to make the 8088 because I think other things couldn't handle it.
Oh. Oh.
The 8086 was the first 16-bit microprocessor. Came out in 1989. Take a guess what year.
8086?
50 years ago.
Oh, right. Of course.
I realize that's not much of a quiz. 78.
And our crack team of researchers has arrived at the answer, as they often
do. I guess it makes sense when you think, like, when did the first IBM PC come out?
81.
Like, early
80s. 81, right? Yeah. But that was based on the 8088. That was based on the compromised.
Oh, that was, okay.
The compromised version of the 8086.
Okay. Maybe that, okay.
Yeah. I'll have to look and see the exact. I might be misstating this, but I'm pretty sure that's my memory of it. You know, I bet you Wikipedia probably has something.
If only there were some way.
But this is not in your notes, and I'm throwing this at you.
It's okay.
But I really think that these new Coffee Lake hexacores combined with Optane, the new Crosspoint, you know, three-dimensional RAM and SSDs, these are going to be the first time we've really seen kind of a big leap in I'm guessing a big leap in performance from Intel, especially on laptops.
I don't know. First time is a tough thing to say. First time in a long time.
No, that's not. I mean, first time ever. I mean, but in years. I mean, we've been going talk.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And this is a very exciting jump, I think. I want a laptop. And we've been talking about this. The reason this is in my mind is because on Sunday, Greg Farrow was on, and we were talking about why Apple wasn't going to introduce new hardware yesterday. Right. And
what's the theory there?
He had a great theory, which is that Intel can't make these new processors in a sufficient quantity for Apple. They're making them 20,000, 30,000. And they can't, make the millions. No, in fact, Intel says we won't have quantity till 2019.
But there are PC makers that sell a lot more PCs than Apple does who are getting these chips.
Yeah, but I don't think they expect to sell more than, say, 50,000 of the Optane i9 variants. Because they're really going to be expensive, I think.
Yeah.
Lenovo
yeah.
has not announced. Dell has announced. There's an Alienware, which is also Dell. I think Asus has announced. Who else has announced these i9? I'm really tempted because I really think these are going to be amazing.
But they'll all be out in 2019 at some point, right?
Oh, not this year?
I wonder.
I thought this fall we were going to see some.
Okay.
Anyway. Anyway, I can see why Apple might wait until they're,
Okay, but that doesn't explain why Apple has waited to ship quad-core processors in their MacBooks.
I know. They're still dual-core. I know.
Somebody asked me on Twitter. I don't think it was rhetorical, but they said, are Apple and Microsoft the only PC makers not shipping these things?
Yeah.
And it's not a bad point. I mean, Microsoft does have one PC, the Surface Book, that has the quad-core version, but it's odd. It's odd for two companies that are very concerned with trying to set the pace.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I bring that up because that's my personal interest. That's not, of course, what anybody else is interested in, since these things are going to cost probably a huge
well, premium. It does speak to how the PC has evolved, right? I mean, the mainstream part of the market now is using mobile devices. They're on mobile chipsets, often ARM-based. That's an area where Intel's not doing very well. And where Intel can kind of turn up the volume and get a lot of press is with some lower volume markets, but still important markets, profitable markets, gaming PCs, workstations,
exactly.
and so forth. So.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, the 8088 was an 8-bit bus. IBM compromised 16-bit for the 8086, and it came out in 79. It came out later. And it was, I think, really designed for the PC because I think IBM did not want to do a 16-bit.
It probably was related to whatever the bus was they chose. They kind of basically got off-the-shelf parts for everything.
Yep.
It was just whatever decision they made to save costs, I bet.
4.77 megahertz, 8088. Okay. It says, according to Wikipedia, IBM chose the 8088 over the 8086 because Intel offered a better price for the former and could supply more units. Sound familiar? Another factor was the 88 allowed the computer to be based on a modified 8085 design because it could interface with NMOS chips with 8-bit data buses. So, economical components. So, there you go.
Ironically, the IBM PC 5150 was not particularly cheap.
Did you have you were an Amiga guy. You didn't have a PC in those days.
Yeah, I mean, back in those days, I was a Commodore guy, and I remember my dad got an IBM PC, and it might have been the very first one for work, and I was thoroughly unimpressed by the command line and by the basic language that came with this thing, and was really impressed by the documentation, which back then was like hardcover binders they would ship you pages.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
I thought that I was really impressed by that. I thought that was that to me was professional. Just really neat.
I had that set, that IBM set. I might still have it somewhere around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had them for a while myself.
I had my first PC. I bought it, I remember, in 1983.
Wow. Wasn't it an IBM? Compaq?
Really? So what did you get?
IBM. I forget. It
like
wasn't
a PC
the PC
AT
junior.
Or something.
It would have been AT.
Yeah, like a PC AT. Maybe,
like a second gen version. Yeah. I was interesting.
Yeah. I knew nothing.
You had the keyboard.
I went to the Boston University bookstore, and I walked in, and I'm like, I want to buy a PC. Nice. I had never even used a PC, basically. The guy goes, okay, sure.
You had a premonition. Your career would be headed that way.
Yeah, I was like, I got to learn this stuff. I'm writing about it. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
I resisted the PC for so long. My wife got a PC, what they call it, PS1. from Sears.
Yes.
In the early 90s.
Yes.
And it was grayscale. It had four colors, like black, white, and two grays, I think it was. At 286 base. It was the biggest piece of junk on the planet. And I just, after my first experience with my dad's computer and then seeing my wife's thing, because she got it for, you know, for writing and whatnot, I was just like, I want nothing to do with this platform. Like, I just, like, I couldn't believe that this was what this thing was. Like, this was the most, the best-selling computer, or, you know, platform, whatever. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it.
Mm. Well,
I had used CPM systems at work before that.
Yes, yeah.
And a Wang data processor.
Young people today listening probably don't understand that IBM PC, when it came out in 81, was really a laggard. Apple was a big seller. Commodore was a big seller. Mm-hmm. Atari. And prior to that, there were the Z80, you know, S100 bus computers, the Altair.
The Jerry Purnell PCs.
Yeah. The Jerry Purnell PCs. Yeah, he had a big S100.
Things could have gone very different for the PC, and they hedged their bets. I mean, it's obviously a famous story that they went to Digital Research to get CPM, and it, you know, whatever, it didn't work out. And
Gary Kilgall was flying and didn't want to land. And,
but they still shipped that thing with three choices of operating system. Right. I mean, even on day one, they were not sure which direction this thing was going to go.
And the big thing that they did was they made it an open platform with standard parts, and they didn't hide how they made it. And the clones came along real quickly. The reason the clones didn't come along instantly is because IBM did copyright the BIOS, but immediately companies like Phoenix reverse engineered the BIOS. And once BIOS compatible computers were available, that became a huge market. And that's really when Microsoft became Microsoft.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a great book by, I think his name's Roger Cannon, maybe, or one of the guy who co-founded Compaq.
Rod Canyon.
He wrote a book many years later. In fact, it's closer to now than it was to then, whenever the book came out. But it's a fascinating read, and there's a lot of little, you kind of new tidbits in there. But he talks about the kind of clean room BIOS recreation thing that they did, and that effort. It's actually really
it's
interesting.
Called Open: How Compaq Ended IBM's PC Domination.
Yeah.
In 2 years later, and helped invent modern computing.
Yeah, no, I mean, everyone remembers IBM. Everyone knows the PC. Everyone knows Microsoft. But their role is important. I mean, it really is one of those things that's gotten forgotten.
Oh, yeah. I think Halt and Catch Fire kind of helped.
Which is a fictionalized story about Compaq, basically, right?
I mean, they don't call it Compaq, but
It's not the exact same story, obviously. Right. There were no women at Compaq. I can assure you of that.
And there was no sex either. But this is cable, so
It was the Bible Belt in the 1980s. That stuff wasn't happening. Yeah. It's a good show. But I kind of wish, you know, I feel like the real story could have been a thing too. You know, like a miniseries or something. It's an interesting story on its own.
I don't know how we got off on this. fast forward to the 21st century, kids, and Qualcomm.
Oh, because of the 50th anniversary, or the
40th. The 80-86. Yes, 1978. No, you're right, 40.
No, it's 40.
IBM's saying 50. So what is it the 50th of?
It must be the 50 of the CPU, like their CPU.
Or their founding, 68. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been 68.
Of Intel specifically. Gotcha, okay.
Yeah. When the gang of four came over from Fairchild and created Intel. It's a great, you know what? It's fun to go back. I like going down memory lane because it's happened fairly quickly within our lifetime, and we're not ancient.
Sure.
And but it's still forgotten kind of in the mists of time. And we wouldn't be here today if it weren't for these events of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. And since we're covering Microsoft, it's really the history of Microsoft to a great degree.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
Fast forward, Intel's history, Qualcomm's in charge.
Now let's talk about how they're going to die.
And Microsoft is all over it. So Qualcomm announced the 850, the Snapdragon 850.
The 850, yeah. So I was telling Mary Jo this story maybe a month ago. It was quite some time ago, but I had seen a story about Qualcomm making a custom variant of one of their CPUs or SoCs, really, for smartwatches. It was going to go into Android watches, Android, whatever that's called, Wear OS. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. you know, that they're branching out like that. They're obviously a humongous company. I know they've probably made specialized chips from here to there. Then they announced something that was related to, I don't know if it was IoT or AI, ML, something like that. And again, we're not going to use the same chip for everything. We're going to make a chip specially designed for this. I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I said, I wonder if they would ever do something like that for the PC. And everyone sort of assumed that the next version of Windows 10 on ARM would, you know, be available on Snapdragon 845 chips, right, which is the current smartphone chip. And then I wrote a really negative review of that Elite X2, which is the first Windows 10 on ARM PC. It's a beautiful device, but the performance and the application compatibility I found was, you know, severely lacking, to the point where I basically said something I hate to say it this way, but I can't really recommend this for anybody. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, in my opinion. And Qualcomm called. And unlike some thinner-skinned companies, and Microsoft does this thing kind of as well, I should say, too. Microsoft is not thin-skinned.
About that article.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I often reference the scene in Airplane where everyone's standing in line with a different weapon to beat up the woman who was screaming, whatever. You know. I'm the woman who was screaming in this scenario. But we talked about some of the stuff that was coming, and the 850 being one of the key, the key big one, because there are smaller things they're working on. I shouldn't say smaller. There are maybe quicker things that are going to happen in the Qualcomm space around application compatibility. They're working with the application makers to help solve some of the issues there. I raised the issue of Adobe Photoshop Elements. It's a 64-bit app. It's in the store, but because it's 64-bit, you can't run it on Windows 10 on ARM. And so they're working with Adobe to explain, look, you literally all you have to do is recompile. You just have to target this chipset and it's going to work. And, you know, we'll see if that happens. But the 850 is a big deal. And I don't know, they're talking about a 30% performance boost. 30% of zero is how much? I don't know. But we'll see.
Should we regret buying the, should Mary Jo and I regret buying the NVX2?
I didn't buy it, but. Oh, okay. You know, I was telling Paul today, I'm finishing up my review of it, and I find it a lot more usable than he does.
I know.
The part that's the most surprising to me is how bad Edge is on this thing. It's terrible.
Well, maybe with the
It's
850.
Weird. We get into a rut, I feel like, in the Microsoft community of always thinking the next thing's going to solve all the problems, you know, right. Whatever it might be. The next version, don't worry, the next version of Edge will be the one that puts it on the top.
Falling for it, yep.
Mm-hmm. The thing that gives me hope, though, with the first of all, you know, when Terry Myerson left, I thought, you know, among many other things that I was thinking at the time, what if this is the end of Windows 10 on ARM? He kind of spearheaded that. Microsoft collectively, but let's say Terry Myerson's group, had a real big bug up their butt about Intel and Intel Inside stickers on laptops and them not doing the right thing to address some of the more modern needs around connectivity and mobility. And Qualcomm was big enough that they could threaten Intel, and that's what they need. They need at least two major players there that they can play off of each other. So Terry leaves. I'm thinking, well, what if Qualcomm's going along with them? But in speaking to Qualcomm, you know, I they're in it for the long haul. There's no doubt about it. They're working on multiple generations of chips. They're going to iterate and improve each time. I think it's fair to say the 850, although I don't know anything about it personally, but I bet it's very much like the 845. I'm sure it's derivative from that. But I think they're going to get further and further apart as we go forward. Anyway, the important thing to me, at least for this year, is they are focused on performance, and that's the issue, isn't it? It's performance. Right. It's the issue. It's the number one issue.
And the OEMs like Lenovo, Asus, and HP all said they're going to come out with devices running the 850 this calendar year, right? Like by holiday 2018.
Yeah, actually, maybe you know the answer to this question. I think Samsung was one of the PC makers they announced at Computex. That's also coming on board this year. Does that sound right?
I didn't notice that, but could be.
Okay.
Could be.
So I heard there was going to be at least three others above and beyond the three that were already committed. Mm. So it's one of those interesting side notes about the always connected PC thing, you know, whatever that is. Mm. We tend to think of it as an ARM Qualcomm type thing, but the truth is the vast majority of those devices, which are going to have, you know, really good battery life and then some kind of an embedded SIM or at least a SIM capability for broadband connectivity, are going to be Intel based, right? They're not going to be ARM based. There are many more PC makers making many more PCs on the Intel side of that equation. But if they could go from three partners to 6 by the end of this year for Gen 2. That's actually really significant.
And Sprint announced, I think, at Computex, they're going to be backing always connected PCs. I don't know if it was Intel and ARM or just ARM. I guess they hadn't been on board.
Yeah, before Computex, Sprint, I think what they announced was, I think it was the HP. If you bought that from them, you would get free cellular, like 4K LTE connectivity unlimited through the end of the year, which is a great deal, obviously. Mm-hmm. And what they announced at Computex was an expansion of that. So I believe what they meant was if you bought any always connected PC or any SIM-based PC at all from them, they would provide that same level of access. The idea being that you would love it so much by the time the year's up, you would want to actually subscribe and pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And I think this week is the first week that always connected ARM-based PCs are available through online stores like Amazon and the Microsoft Store, right? Because a lot of people have said to me, how do you get these, right? Like, where are they?
And that was something they had mentioned to me as well, which was the HP kind of launched it back in, a couple months ago, right? March or April. But it was never available from the site. If you went to the site, it was out of stock. You know, people kept saying, I kind of want to go look at this thing, but they don't have it for sale. So I guess it was kind of a soft launch. And one of the things that's changed, actually, I'm sure there's many things that changed, but one of the things that's important is the software image on the device has changed a lot since the beginning. So the thing I had may have not been optimally configured. You know, it had an older version of Office 365 on there. It had older versions of drivers and things. So that's why I asked you. You know, so Mary Jo is going to give me a recovery disk from her computer, so I can recover mine to the new version and make sure it's up to date.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I've been using both, the one that you loaned me that has Pro on it, and then the one HP gave me later than yours that is Windows 10S. And I have to say, the Windows 10S one's running better than the Pro one.
Yeah, I think it runs better.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it might be, like you said, because you got an early version that wasn't quite ready for prime time or something, you know.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought HP was just selling them at the time. I didn't really realize that it was kind of a limited launch or whatever at first. But the Asus is available. I know that. Lenovo's got one coming out. I'm not sure if that one's available, but I would imagine it would be soon.
But now that we know about the 850 chip, it makes you kind of think, should I get the 835
now? Is
that
much faster or no?
30%.
You're saying 30%.
30%
might be enough to make the difference, frankly.
Yeah, and this is always one of those questions. This is the Adam Osborne thing, speaking of things from the past.
Yeah,
but
they shouldn't mention it if you can't sell it.
I feel like they must have an understanding that it's not going to be huge right up front, and that maybe this isn't going to harm too much, you know?
Yeah.
If people are really looking for something that gets incredible battery life and acceptable performance, let's call it, and you can't wait. I mean, I guess you have choices today, but if you can wait 6 months
see what it looks like. I really like the X2. If we're a little faster, maybe 30% is enough. Mm-hmm. I think when 5G is a little more prevalent or higher speed, I mean, I have to say, it convinced me that future laptops, I will almost always try to get a WAN in there, try to get LTE in it.
I love having that. Qualcomm didn't throw HP under the bus exactly, but, you know, one of the conversations you have to have around this HP, which is a beautiful machine, it's beautiful. The hardware's gorgeous. It feels premium, looks premium. It's a nice computer.
Oh, I love it.
But the thing ships with the LTE capability down tuned to like less than 50% of what it's capable of doing.
Really? I didn't know that.
And HP has said that, they're going to improve the capabilities through firmware updates over the course of time. But the question kind of begs, why not just ship
it that way?
Yeah. And I don't know. So LTE today, LTE Advanced one is up to 1 gigabit with the version of the modem that's shipping in the 850 based PCs that will come out this fall.
Yeah, it's got the gigabit.
It's going to that's going to go up to 1.2 gigabits now. Wow. So we're actually hitting 5G ish, kind of speeds or possibly
plenty fast enough, faster than theoretical, your home, right?
That's the thing,
I felt it was fast. I'm surprised to hear you say this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People, ask, what's the big deal with 5G? What's the big deal with 5G? the big deal with 5G is that, theoretically at least, accessing data from the cloud is faster than accessing it locally. That's the big deal. That you can go up and grab a movie file, download it in seconds, and watch it on your computer offline in seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when things become really seamless. So it's not just some sort of it is theoretical, actually. I was going to say it's not a theoretical goal. It's a theoretical thing today. But at some point, we're gonna have this capability. It's going to change everything.
Yeah, and I think even when the NV2 X2 came out, Paul, I remember you saying, cautioning, mm-hmm. that it's going to be faster next year. It wasn't even the 845, right? It's the 835. So it wasn't even the, or was it the 845?
It was the 835.
It's the 835. First version, so it wasn't even the fastest Snapdragon available at the time.
Yeah.
So it's you guys didn't buy it. You're reviewing it, but I bought it. I knew what I was getting into. I thought it was such an important platform.
People wondered, you know, and we openly asked, why not just ship this thing with the 845? It's out. You know, and I think the reason is Qualcomm and Microsoft together had, you know, obviously talked about this stuff, and we are going to split off and do our own CPU. For now, we have to focus on this thing. And during development, they just focused on the thing they had.
Got it.
That was a known quantity. Now, I'm just saying that. I'm assuming that that's what
that
I know. That
would explain why they're not worried about Osborne-ing it, too. I mean, they probably said, well, we'll sell 5,000 of them, but this is
it will be good data for them, and they can get the feedback. And
that's exactly why.
They must have sort of known, like, this first gen's not going to fly off the shelves anyway. So let's we'll do it as well as we can, obviously. Mm-hmm. There are going to be those early compatibility problems, too. That's still kind of a weird, sticky area. And then, of course, the performance. But we can bump up performance over iterations of the processor over the next couple of years.
Last week, before Computex, Qualcomm had an event in San Francisco announcing new dedicated VR chips, mixed reality chips, too.
Yeah, and I asked them about this because I said they said the 850, and I said stop. I said I had this theory. Tell me if this is true. And I said what I said to you guys. And they said, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. I said, excellent. So, in other words, I think what you're going to do is see more of that kind of announcement from Qualcomm mm-hmm. over the next 6 months or year or whatever.
You know, they're going to SoCs is what you're talking about.
Yeah, to specific workloads or device types or whatever you want to, however you want to describe that.
You say it's more profound than immediately obvious in your premium article.
Well, because it just sounds, in other words, 850 is higher than 835. It must be faster. It's a newer chip, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, if they just put an 845 in it, that would be better in some ways as well. The reason it's more profound is that thing we were just talking about. They're literally custom tailoring these chips for specific things. Because Microsoft can work with them and say, look, this is what we need. You know, the chips that they make, ARM chips, already have this thing that's so wonderful for these mobile devices, which is that it's off. And those the small cores, what's the right term for this? The small cores can still operate and do things. And so they can sip a little data, get a notification down, get an email down, and it doesn't really impact the standby time or the battery that much. That's something that's very much lacking on the Intel side. And it makes the power management stuff much harder.
We should point out this is Apple's secret sauce too. They're making custom silicon based on ARM architecture, but they're tuning it for the platform, the needs of the platform. You know, early on, they could eliminate anything that was needed to support flash so they can make a better, faster chip by cutting things out, by focusing on other things. So Qualcomm's just following that playbook, really, I think.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the answer to this question, but if you think about it, you've got two major processor architectures. One of them is oriented to performance. It can scale to crazy heights, as we just discussed. Power management's a little bit of a problem, right? So you got that thing. And then on the other side, you've got this thing that was designed from the get-go for power management specifically, mobile devices. But the performance has been improving dramatically. And if you use an iPhone, which is ARM-based and Apple's own processors, or use an Android phone like a Samsung flagship or whatever that's using the latest Qualcomm processor, they have tablets and Chromebooks and whatever. Those things perform really, really well. I mean, which would you rather start with? You know, we're going into the PC space. They're going to be for these mobile devices like the X2. You know, which one will eventually make the most sense for that kind of device, right? It's probably a lot easier for the Qualcomm side, I think. You know, than it is for the Intel side. Absolutely. I don't know that they're ever going to solve that technical issue with the small cores.
So it's still 32-bit, though. Isn't that one of the issues, in my opinion?
No, it's 64-bit.
The hardware is 64-bit.
It's 64-bit. 64-bit.
No, they're both 64-bit. Oh. The issue is that the emulator that Microsoft wrote can only emulate 32-bit Windows software.
And they're going to fix that at some point.
Yeah, they've already got a preview kit out for the 64-bit, right?
Well, they're not going to solve it so that the emulator runs 64-bit code. What they're going to do is provide tools for developers so they can make their recompile to ARM 64 or to x86, you know, 32-bit as well, I guess. But yeah, so the issue is store apps and UWP apps and Centennial apps and I guess maybe in the future MSIX apps, whatever. If those things are 64-bit, they're never going to be emulated on the ARM Qualcomm chipset.
Yep.
And you point out in your article, Paul, that they're providing aptX support in the 850 as well as their own acoustic virtual surround capabilities, 4K video capture, hardware accelerated support for machine learning and AI. So this is a chip that they take out the stuff that's for smartphones and they put in stuff that makes sense on a Windows platform. It's really cool.
Yeah, right. I mean, we're going to focus on the performance because, you know, that's the lacking there. But the Intelligent Edge thing is kind of interesting. And, you know, Microsoft went to them and said, look, we're doing stuff on the device now. We need AI capabilities. They have AI chips, you know, I think or one of us mentioned this earlier, but they can integrate this into the SoC.
Yep.
Microsoft can take advantage of it with Cortana and whatever else they have. So, you know, we'll see.
This is happening at Apple. This is happening at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. I think Intel brought this on themselves, but it doesn't look good.
No.
They have a couple of weapons they can pull out, right? So they did the quad core thing last year. That's gonna make a lot of people happy. It's a gimme. If you were gonna buy a computer anyway, you're getting 40% performance boost or whatever it is. No battery life hit at all. It's a win, right? There's no doubt about it. And they can scale up like we were just discussing for really high end needs, gaming and workstations, whatever else. But yeah, there's the soft underbelly over there, and I do think it's the mainstream part of that market. Is the mobile computer thing? It's the mobile devices, really. And there's some, I don't know. I don't know what to think of this. Sometimes I've talked about like the Surface laptop's a good example of this. I can open that thing up and it comes right on. You know, it comes right on. It's instant on. I get really good battery life out of some computers. There's no doubt about it. They are thicker and heavier than this thing, the X2. They do have fans mostly. Standby time, I don't know. I sometimes computers have good standby time, though, too. I just opened a MacBook Air for the first time since I took it to build, and it had 70% battery or something. It hasn't been sitting there draining.
I feel like Windows PCs, though, that's a huge problem. I mean,
it can be,
unlike you, I don't feel like I've ever used a Windows PC with actually really good battery life, and I feel like connected standby never works on any Windows PC.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some evidence.
That's one of the reasons I like this NV2 X2.
Really,
because I'm like, okay, wait, when you open it after you haven't used it for a few days, the battery is right where you left it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny because I still have to go back to what other people have said. And now you're one of them. A lot of people have found that capability to be magical and life-changing in the context of a computer. When I used the X2, I was like, whatever. Like, I never really thought much of that. I think part of it is just I always have so many computers going anyway. I'm always charging them, and it's just part of my compulsive, I would never leave the thing unplugged anyway nature or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, even on the Surface Pro, which Microsoft says gets 14 hours of battery life, I feel like I've never gotten more than 6.
Yeah.
I'm not running benchmarks here, but
you're not running videos in a loop.
I'm not.
You should try doing that because you would get killer battery life.
But, you know, like if I sit here and I use like the most basic apps and then have like TweetDeck open and Notepad and like my basic stuff. And then I'm like, in 6 hours, the battery's dead.
Yeah. Right. That's pretty typical. That's actually not bad.
Right. I mean, people say that's good enough. You know, that's all day battery life. I'm like, sort of.
All day. I don't know what kind of day you have.
If you go to bed early and wake up
late. Yeah. If you like take a lot of breaks, and if connected standby
like
works.
A day government employee, maybe that's a full day. I don't know.
Not everybody tries to write their columns at Rattle and Hum. I have to say that's you're a unique specimen. No, I'm kidding.
She is a unique specimen. I think that's fair.
Well, that's fair. Let's take a little break. There's more from Computex, including Microsoft's kind of opening up the Surface Hub for others to get involved.
Before we do this, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
It's June 6th. Why are you wearing a huge sweater? It's 75 degrees outside.
I don't consider the weather when I come on these shows. I don't plan.
I know it's like a Mr. Rogers anniversary or something, but it's got to be beautiful out there.
Well, it's a little chillier here than it is there. It's about 70.
It is. I feel like California in the summer is cooler than it is here.
We don't necessarily get that hot. And it's cool in the studio. You know, we keep it pretty cold. I can wear, basically, the answer is I can wear anything I want because I'm stuck inside this booth.
Right. Yeah.
But you're right. I should probably consider. Remember, it's winter down under. I'm dressed for Australia.
Yeah. This is like eating like stew in June. It just feels wrong. You know?
They say hot soup cools you off.
They're going to have some like slow cooked meat. No, we're not.
I'll barbecue tonight. Will that make you feel better? And I'll put on shorts and a Hawaiian shirt. All right. I'm going to change in the next break. You'll see.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
You'll see.
I didn't mean to trigger a change. I was just
curious. Our show today brought to you by WordPress.com. It's always beautiful at WordPress.com. I moved my blog over there about a year ago. I'd been using WordPress for more than a decade. But I always hosted it myself, which meant I spent a lot of time, you know, tweaking it and updating it. And I guess that's good because I really learned how it works and all of that. But you don't want to do that. You want to put up a site. In fact, you really ought to put up a site. Everybody should have a website that they own with their name. If you're a business, that counts double. And WordPress is a place to do it. You don't have to be a geek. You do need an online presence. It gives you the flexibility, WordPress.com, the flexibility, the freedom to share your voice, your work, your way. Don't be dependent on Facebook or Twitter. Sure, have an account there, but have your own site that everything points back to. And if you're a business and you don't have your own site, I think I'm not alone when I say I don't like that. If I'm trying to look up a plumber or a house painter and you don't have a website, I don't know. And you say, but my job is painting houses, not making websites. Well, that's the beauty of WordPress.com. You don't need to do the coding. You don't need to do the design. They do it all for you. Beautiful designs that reflect, you know, your exact brand, your personality. Everything you need to get your site up and running like that. And, of course, if you ever have any questions, their customer support team is there Monday through Friday, 24 hours a day, and weekends too. Somebody was asking me, can I sell stuff there? I said, yeah. I think it was my son. I'm really pleased. Both my son and daughter have finally come around. I registered their domain names when they were born. And my son said, is there somewhere I can put my photos? He's a big photographer, avid photographer. Facebook compresses the hell out of them. I said, yes, and you don't own that site. I said, here, WordPress.com. He said, can I sell pictures there? You bet. They have great e-commerce options. Everything from a simple buy button to a complete online store. And it's affordable. Plans start at just $4 a month. When you're ready to expand your online reach, WordPress makes it easy. Built-in SEO. They've got social sharing, so your customers, your visitors can spread the word about you on their Facebook and their Twitter. Specialized plugins to meet your needs, too. I use the Google AMP plugin, so my pages load. Try it. They're really fast on mobile. LeoLaporte.com. 30% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Wait, what? Yes. Almost a third of all the websites in the world are running WordPress. That should tell you something. Get started today with 15% on any new plan purchase, 15% off. Go to wordpress.com/windows to create your website. wordpress.com/windows, 15% off your brand new website. It's a good deal. wordpress.com/windows. We thank them so much for hosting leolaporte.com. I pay them. I have a business plan, actually. I want all the features. Go visit leolaporte.com and then sign up at wordpress.com/windows. Thank you, WordPress. More from Computex. Tell us about this, the collaboration displays. Are they making it possible for other companies to do Surface Hub, basically?
No. That's what we all thought when we heard about this. This is not OEMs make Surface Hub. This is not what that is. They're actually displays, not computers. They're displays that you hook up to a computer. And they're still cool. They're large screen, multi-touch, work with pen. The way they originally talked about it, they're like, it's based on Windows 10. Well, it's based on Windows 10 because the PC hooked up to it is running Windows 10.
Yeah. would you describe this as an intelligent edge device, Mary Jo?
That's how Microsoft described it. In fact, it's actually a peripheral, not a computer, right? When we first saw the information about this from Microsoft, I'm like, oh, wow, they're working with OEMs to make Surface Hubs. No, they are not. What is interesting about these to me, though, is they told me yesterday, these are going to be significantly cheaper than Surface Hubs. We think they're going to be big in education because they're going to be affordable. And it's the same idea, where it's a centralized, like a board for collaboration that is going to be optimized for people to use with Teams and with Microsoft Whiteboard and Microsoft 365 running on the PC. So, yeah, it's still cool. It's still interesting. They've already got two partners saying they're going to make them as of late this year. They've got Sharp and Avocor. And that's what these things are. So it's pretty interesting, but it's not as interesting as we thought when we first heard about it. I think it'll be, the other thing, when I saw it out and they told me it was a peripheral, I'm like, oh, wait, so does this mean that you guys are going to make them too? Like, is there going to be a Surface Windows collaboration display? Because people,
like
when they saw Surface Studio. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like everybody wanted a standalone monitor, right, yep. From Surface. They were like, oh, yeah.
Still do.
And they're like, nothing to share at this time, which doesn't mean no.
But yeah. That's true. It means right. Please go away and stop asking the hard questions.
Stop asking us that question, Mary Jo. Mm-hmm. But they, the other, one other cool thing, they did talk about this as an IoT edge device, but the reason they did is it can hook up to Azure IoT services so that, remember at Build, we saw a demo where people came into the room and it said, hi, Paul. Hi, Mary Jo. This is going to have that capability because of that. And any data, any data that is collected through the IoT service can be sent back to like a facilities management person so that they can know when rooms are being used, when air conditioning needs to be turned on, lights off. So it's useful.
But what does that even mean, though? So there's some processing, some compute built into the display. It's connected to the cloud.
Yep.
What's the platform in there? It's not just you can connect a computer or anything else to it. Sensors. Okay.
There are sensors in it. They said, like spatially aware sensors inside the device that make this possible. We haven't seen it in person.
Bunch of things happening, and that point of time is somewhere in the future, and they're kind of dribbling out little bits of it. They did that workplace demo at Build, which clearly there was more going on than we saw, or that at least that they would talk about. Now we're getting this piece.
Yep.
I'll tell you what's happening, Thurrott. You want to know what's happening? I'll show you what's happening.
Oh, man.
I'll
Barbecue really, time. Bare feet would have been better, but okay. That's good.
Flip-flops.
You have like a flat cap or a hat you could wear, like a
I know what you mean. Yeah. Hold on a second. I got that too.
Like one of those
hold on.
Like they used to wear in the 60s when you were nominating a president, you'd wear those white kind of, you know, the white hats or whatever. No, that works. Oh, there you go.
He needs a beret, like a Bob Ross beret. Summertime, there he is.
Summertime. Does that hat come with the hair?
Yeah, it comes with the hair.
It was like a Guy Fieri hat. What is that?
It is. For sure it is.
Is it really?
Well, Diners, Drive-In, and Dives.
Maybe it is. I never thought of that. Well, we have alternatives. Like,
yeah. Next up, Sammy Hagar talks about his years with Van Halen. There
How
we go.
Did I get, like a nice Hawaiian punch. All right. You feel better now, Paul?
Yeah, thank you. That's more month appropriate.
And I've taken off my shoes, by the way. I just want you to know. I take you seriously, Paul, in every respect.
I think you have a hat for every occasion.
I have a hat literally for every occasion.
That's impressive. You probably have access to more clothes in that building than I do in my own house.
It's like a theater department in here. I got everything. And fortunately, I just got my Instagram shorts.
I would go upstairs and change into a different shirt, but all my shirts look exactly like this shirt. So
it would, you're like would Mark Salzberg, whatever his name is. Windows 10 IoT services. Everybody's got to get into the IoT.
I know. Okay, wait till you guys hear about this, though, because it opens up some interesting thought patterns on my end anyway. So this thing they announced at Computex is called Windows 10 IoT Core Services. Sounds super boring, right? Okay, what this is...
We admit
it. Wait till you hear what this is. No,
but go on.
But please.
Wait till you hear what this is. This is you pay Microsoft to use Windows 10 IoT Core Services, and you don't have to take any feature updates. You can just get security updates if you pay them.
Mm-hmm. You can hear the record scratching sound now as everyone sort of contemplates a world in which we could do that for normal Windows.
Exactly.
Now.
Like one guy said on Twitter to me this morning, he goes, if they announce at Ignite that every version of Windows 10 is free, but you have to pay to not take feature updates, you'll see a line out the door and around the building.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they are thinking, but this is
not
taking Windows 10 IoT Core.
That's not true either. I know people are mad about the updates, but.
IT pros would do it.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The businesses might do it. So
businesses. Right.
I don't actually mind getting updates. I just want them to be less stupid. You
disruptive.
Know?
Yeah. Disruptive. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So this is Windows 10 IoT Core, which is one of the two versions of Windows Embedded that is for sale these days. Before, without the IoT services piece that is now in preview as of this week, you only could get it with feature updates. Like you had to take the feature updates. If you take this version for some unknown fee, we don't know how much it'll cost, you don't have to take the feature updates and you can just take the security updates. You know what? If you're running an IoT device, that makes way more sense.
You don't want updates. You don't want
feature updates.
Is this the version that was also tied to 10 years of support? Is that part of this?
No. So Windows 10 IoT Enterprise has 10 years of support and it's an LTSC, you know, which means it doesn't get feature updates. That already exists. This is you get 10 years of support if you decide to take IoT Core Services, because then you'll be on that long-term servicing channel. Gotcha. You won't be on the semi-annual. So this is interesting, right? Not to take feature updates.
It's an interesting way to make money because that's what that market would want. It is also what the business market would want. And I know that they have a, 18-month kind of timeline. Oh, no, but they have the long-term servicing branch or channel, whatever they call it this year.
Only if you're running Enterprise.
Yeah. So how long could you go on Windows 10 Enterprise today without having to update feature?
10 years.
Yep. Okay. So they already have it then, basically, for their biggest customers.
Yeah. Great. But, you know, on Windows 10 Enterprise on the long-term servicing channel, Microsoft says, here's their guidance. Don't do this if you're an IT pro who just doesn't want to take feature updates, because this is meant for medical equipment, things that need to be stable. It's not meant for you guys who are not able to handle the updates.
I keep talking about this thing that doesn't exist that I think is a good idea if done correctly, which is Microsoft 365 for consumers, right? People often ask when I bring this up, well, what would the Windows 10 component of that look like, right? And to date, the only thing I've really come up with is that, well, it would give you Windows 10 Pro, right? A lot of consumer PCs come with Home. There are certain advantages to having Pro, or maybe you could get like Home Advanced or whatever. You know, I think that kind of thing could be interesting. The ability to actually stave off feature updates over some arbitrary period of time, honestly, could be a part of that as well. You know, I honestly, I wouldn't do it myself, but I could see people not want, like saying, like, I just want this thing to be the way it is. I use it for work. I just want it to go.
So, it's feature updates that people don't want. I don't understand. Not that. They just don't want the unreliability.
Right. It's too disruptive for a lot of people. You know, like they haven't tested their apps with it. You know, you get the things happening like look at 1803.
But you can block that if you're in business, can't you? You don't have to take the updates in business, do you?
You can block it for a period of time.
Leo, really?
Nice hat.
Are you a smooth criminal, Leo?
He's a smooth operator.
It's the barbecue. It's the barbecue. So, like, if you're a subscriber, what do they call that? If you're subscribed to Windows,
say you're a business user, using Pro. You can block them for 18 months, but you have to take them at some point. Okay. You can't block them forever.
Yeah, the biggest businesses that are on enterprise and pay lots of money can, she just said, go for 10 years. I mean, that's actually kind of interesting to me that it's that long.
I think it's hysterical that this is a selling point. No new features necessary. You can keep the same old version. No problem.
Okay. I'm going to tell you guys some, you know, this is anecdotal advice, okay? I was talking to a large enterprise customer this week. And I said to him, how's your 1803 rollout going? Because they're using it already. He said, we've had 60 cases in the last 4 months of forced upgrades, firmware not updating properly, Office not working properly. It's going great.
I love it.
Isn't it amazing?
We'll add that to the chatter.
It used to be, though, that was the way it was. I mean, that was always the saying was, in business they don't do updates. They want to test them and they take their time. And I'm surprised that Microsoft changed that.
They kind of didn't, right? It's kind of semantics now. I mean, back in the day, you would buy Windows XP or something, and you'd say, I'm going to use this thing for 10 years, 8 years, or whatever the time frame was. And then Windows Vista would come out, and then Windows 7 would come out. And then Windows 8 would come out. And then you were really screwed because you waited all that time and Windows 8 was what you got. No, but more often, not really, because you could actually install Windows 7 belatedly. But then you were on a more restricted time schedule because Windows 7 was supported for 10 years from the beginning of it, not from when you did it. And you get into this kind of, people can kind of handle this notion of these different versions of Windows. Today it's all just Windows 10. And I think it gets a little slippery in people's minds because they I'm going to run Windows 10 for 10 years, they're saying. And yeah, you are, but you're actually running Windows 10 version, whatever it is.
One, two, three.
Different versions.
Because each version is a feature update. That's how you get the version. Back in the day, we would have called it Windows Yogurt or Windows XP 2.
It's changed so much because it used to be you didn't upgrade unless you bought a new computer, period.
Exactly.
Period.
Yeah, for individuals, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And now you buy a computer,
too, right?
But you upgrade as a person. You get these things twice a year now. Accelerated schedule.
Why does Microsoft push in this? If people don't want it,
the reason they say they're pushing it is because it's easier if everybody's on the same version for software vendors to support it, and also for them for patching. Yeah. And updating, because when everybody's on different things, like you're on Windows 7 Service Pack 1, you're on Windows 8.1, you're on this, you're on that, they have to test and do so much extra work to make sure everybody is on the same platform that it's prohibitive for them. Okay, that's one reason. The other reason they say, and I kind of buy this one and I kind of don't, is the happiest users are users using the most recent version of their products.
They're making that up.
Just
making that one up.
We can tell from their social media tweets that they're in a way better mood.
There's no way
Windows
to know
10.
That. I'm sorry.
No, you know what I would say, though? Like, you get somebody who's still running something like Outlook 2010, and you show them the newest version of Outlook, and they can't believe what's in there. And they're like, whoa, I didn't know I could do this, this, and this. So to some extent, I buy a little into that.
What the hell? You know, I mean,
no, there's some features that are brand new that are more useful, you know, around things like groups or things like that. So I'm not defending Microsoft.
First of all, that's Outlook, not Windows. Right. And second of all, you can't say that for every Office app, even. You can't even say it.
There goes Mary Jo again, defending Microsoft.
You can't say Word.
I'm telling you what they're saying. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Maybe an Outlook. I don't know.
If you want to make an Outlook happy, user not happy, Notepad. Take away Outlook.
The first pretext is the most sensible. You want a common platform.
You do.
Yesterday at WWDC, Apple was touting the fact that 50% of iOS users were using the current version, already upgraded to iOS 11. And that's what Microsoft's saying, right, with 1803, 50%.
Well, they haven't said it yet, but. Yeah.
That's what. but yes, they're right. It's
they want to be more like iOS, and iOS
they
is,
do.
Does, you know, security is less of a problem because of it.
Talked about that Intel Qualcomm thing. Microsoft is Intel in this equation. The problem is Windows 10 is way more complicated than iOS, and it runs on a vastly different range of devices. Like, it's not even comparable.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a handful of devices over here that run iOS, and then there is a planet full of devices, all of which have their own configurations and idiosyncrasies.
Although
it's difficult.
It's, you know, they also said yesterday 1 billion devices currently running, you know, running now, active devices running iOS.
No, I mean, device right up there types.
But that's right up there with Windows, isn't it? I mean,
no, but that's the dream, right? In other words, you have a billion. What was the number?
1 billion.
1 billion. So you have a billion devices running on iOS, but there's only 7 or 8 discrete devices, you know, like device types.
Right.
That's the dream. Of course, Microsoft would love that.
Yeah.
But unfortunately,
it's
we have
the case, though.
1 billion completely different devices.
Yeah, they're all
running
different. Yeah.
3 different versions of Windows. Yeah. It's the opposite end of the scale.
Yeah, you're right.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
What the frick?
Is that in the
Guess
notes?
Who wrote this one?
Like what the frick is the intelligent edge, Paul?
Is that hat?
That hat is perfect for this discussion right now.
I've got the intelligent edge.
You do.
Well, yes. We had a very short pre-briefing about Computex with Microsoft, and it occurred to me that any client something that has a processor in it is the intelligent edge to Microsoft now. And in the old days, you know, it was very simple. We had a server up in the data center, actually under someone's desk maybe. And then we had a computer. That was a client. We had a server. It was client server. It was beautiful. And then eventually the server went up to the cloud for the most part. But conceptually, kind of the same thing. And the client world went in this completely different direction. And now to Microsoft, the client, which is the intelligent edge, is like anything that has compute on it. Down from that little fingernail-sized chip that they're so proud of, the Azure Sphere. Linux-based microcontroller, or whatever it's called, the IoT devices that Mary Jo was just talking about, Windows 10, which runs on any range of devices from consoles to PCs to tablets to Surface Hub to whatever, phones, tablets that don't run Microsoft operating systems, my Fitbit, the switches in the wall, everything is the intelligent. Like, what is this?
It's all the intelligent. You know,
everything. Yeah.
It's really... It's not as straightforward as it used to be. And I mean that across the board. You know, Microsoft is targeting these audiences that are so different from people and businesses, right? Businesses being groups of people, if you think about it. They're targeting cities, like smart cities and municipalities and energy companies and retail and manufacturing. And it's like this thing has exploded, you know? I don't know exactly how many Azure services there are. I can't count that high, but it's hundreds, if not thousands, of discrete services that they provide to this multitude of intelligent edge devices and businesses or markets. I don't know what to call them. It's really complicated now. You know,
so how does Microsoft use this term intelligent edge? What are they saying? I mean, why is this come
the way
up?
they Yeah, because this is their solution to we don't have mobile. We're going for the next wave.
Oh.
And
forget
the next
mobile.
Wave.
It's all mobile.
Well, mobile's just a cute little part of it now, right? Remember that mobile thing that destroyed the PC? That's just
it's
tiny.
It's all mobile.
That's just nothing. You know, this is a bigger thing, and it's called Intelligent Edge. And Intelligent Edge is everything. And mobile is a little piece of that pie, or maybe a decent-sized piece of the pie. But the thing is, you know, as a let's say you're a developer targeting Microsoft platforms and so forth, you understand C# and the way that Microsoft's APIs work and so forth. We're at this kind of squishy point in time where they don't actually have a set of APIs that will work across all of these things, right? I mean, so kind of calling it like there's no Intelligent Edge API. They have APIs that are specific to each one of those things. And so if you want to just get into IoT, for example, and you want to stay in the Microsoft sphere for some reason, you actually have some choices to make because Microsoft has multiple IoT platforms now to choose from. And you might go the Windows route. That might make some sense depending on the type of device you have. You might go the Azure Sphere route, which is just kind of beginning to happen. It's just, it used to be very simple, you know, as a Microsoft guy, in my case, to understand what was going on, you know. I think the first time this was punched into my head was when they announced the original version of what was then called Windows Azure, where I was completely befuddled by this thing, despite my, to that day, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12, 15 years or whatever of experience with the company. And I look at the Intelligent Edge stuff that's happening now, and I get the same kind of overwhelmed feeling. Like, I don't quite understand how or even if all these things actually fit together. I don't think they do. And I kind of feel like there's a little bit of spaghetti on the wall. Like, let's see if, you know, maybe this one, look, this one's stuck and this one's stuck. And, you
actually,
know, maybe we go forward
Ben,
with that.
Ben Thompson in Stratechery today, I don't know if you read his new
column,
addresses this. He says, he's talking about the reason of Microsoft acquired GitHub, which we're going to get to in a little bit. Windows remains an important platform in the enterprise and for gaming, although Steam, Fourth of July is coming up. Although Steam, much to Microsoft's chagrin, takes a good – and I know the words to God Bless America, by the way, in case you want to play it. Although Steam, much to Microsoft's chagrin, takes a good amount of the platform profit on gaming. But, he says, the company has no platform presence in mobile, is in second place in the cloud – And that second place is predicated on shepherding existing corporate customers to cloud computing. So it's not clear why any new company or developer would choose Microsoft. So that's, he says, the context for the acquisition of GitHub. And we'll get to that. But he's talking about this, though.
Yeah, I think he's making an important point about developers there because we talk a lot about, you know, kids in school and they use Google services. Maybe they have Chromebooks or even Apple products or whatever. And Microsoft doesn't really factor into the equation and how that's a huge problem for the future for Microsoft because those people are going to enter the workforce. And for developers, I've been saying this for a long time. I feel like Microsoft lost a lot of people back when the Longhorn thing kind of imploded. And it's only gotten worse since because of things like Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And you know, there's a whole developer thing happening out in the world today that Microsoft is trying to be part of for sure. That's kind of JavaScript, web, FOSS based. It doesn't use Microsoft tools or technologies, doesn't use Microsoft languages. And they're kind of losing their hold on this kind of thing. What was the Apple had some crazy figure for like the number of developers that target iOS.
It's everyone.
Was some astronomical.
It's 100%.
It's yeah.
Because there's so much money there. The App Store serves 500 million weekly visitors. Developers have earned 100 billion, which, as Ben points out, means that Apple's earned like 30 billion.
30,
with little overhead.
Yep.
It's clearly a winning strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is Microsoft needs to be part of this
somehow
world. They've done good jobs with some companies and bad jobs with others. And I understand it's weird how you really hear from the fringe anti-Microsoft group that still exists out in the world that is freaking out over this GitHub thing. But I think they're going to handle this well. I think Microsoft is the right steward for this thing. I think they will do a good job with it. And for Microsoft, it's important because I think it's going to get them in front of developers who might not have en masse considered Microsoft. I think Visual Studio Code has gone a long way, actually.
It supports GitHub out of the box, doesn't it?
It's an Electron app. Is that like a Finding Nemo hat now?
All right, I don't mean to interrupt or anything.
No, it's okay.
I'm just You know, you said you wanted me to dress for summer.
I do it to you all the time. This is nice revenge for you. I've lost my train of thought completely. Thank you. So
we'll get to GitHub. I don't want to. Unless you want to do GitHub.
Save the GitHub.
Yeah, save the GitHub. Save the GitHub. Sure. Amazon's doing white box PCs with Alexa. That is just a strange story.
It is.
That broke today.
Yeah. So there's been this kind of thing with Alexa over time. Obviously, they release it first in their own devices. They release it for device makers to make their own speakers and other devices. Then they release it for PCs. We saw this year a bunch of PC makers at CES announced supporting this, including four of the biggest ones. Off the top of my head, I think it's Asus, Acer, Lenovo, and HP, I think. Big. So they're going to ship. In fact, Acer, I believe, is shipping all of their computers with Alexa built in. So the step they took this week is very interesting. They worked with three different ODMs, and ODMs are the companies that actually make PCs for PC makers, if you will. They make reference designs as well. You know, back in the day, I remember I was reviewing a Dell, whatever it was, Latitude something something. It was actually made by a company, it was probably made by Asus actually before they became a PC maker, but it was made by an ODM, and Dell just put some of their own badges on it and sold it as their computer. These days, the biggest PC makers in the world probably don't do that too much anymore. They have their own design studios and so forth. But if you're a white box PC maker, especially like one of the really smaller companies, these things are really valuable because you can't invent a computer, you know, from nothing yourself. You're tiny. And so ODMs, one of the things that they can do is supply these, you know, basic computers that you can, you know, modify yourself and sell. So they work with three ODMs to create four different reference platforms or computers that others can build that are optimized for Alexa and will ship with Alexa. And that just means that it's just an expansion of their plans to get Alexa out to more and more computers. And it's really subversive when you think about it, because mm-hmm. Windows 10 ships with Cortana. Mm-hmm. It already has a, you know, and PC makers, some PC makers are doing this. You're seeing things like far-field microphones built into computers. And the point of that is that you're across the room, music's playing maybe, or TV's on, and you speak at a normal volume, and that computer over there still hears you. These things are built into smart speakers as well, of course. But, you know, that particular hardware, it works great with Cortana, of course. But if you put Alexa on there, it's going to work with that as well, too.
And okay, but my question.
It's interesting.
My question is, who talks to their PC?
Right. So this is what I would just say to that is there. One of the things that really fascinated me this year, and I think when the year's over, I'm going to look back at this and it's going to be one of the big things, was there was an interview with a guy from Amazon. This doesn't happen very much, or it hasn't in the past, where he was talking about the surprising success that they've had with Alexa, especially in certain demographics where people that do not adopt technology early. Two of them that stick out in my mind, it's just weird to me, are old people and people who like country music. Demographically, this audience does not embrace new technology. Now, obviously, there are old people. My parents have one.
What if you're an old person who likes country music? Then you're
exactly.
Really,
then you're riding a horse and buggy to the Amish county fair. Hey, you're putting your pumpkin up as you know for in the competition. I don't know, but
Adrian, that's hysterical.
So, what's the type of person who would talk to their computer? It's the type of person who still uses their computer for everything, like. When the rest of the world, as I think of it, has moved on to mobile devices to do things like post to social media, send emails, browse the web, read books, listen to music, watch videos, whatever it is, there's actually this probably sizable group of people who are sticking with their computers. They're familiar with them. They know how they work. And they would rather use that device. The other thing to think of, and this is kind of funny because this just happened at lunchtime today, is there are households where you have multiple, then the opposite end of the spectrum. You have a house where there's multiple devices around the house that can listen to you. So you say, hey, G, and then it chirps mm-hmm. up and it answers your question. There's no reason your computer couldn't be one of them. And your computer is the one of them that, by the way, has this beautiful big screen. And some of the information you're asking about could be portrayed visually, and it would be very valuable to have that happen on a computer. I don't think a lot of people use computers in their kitchen, you know, like we see sometimes in ads and stuff, but some people must, some people do. But you know, what's the weather is kind of a cool question. You can get the weather forecast. It'd be nice just to see a picture of it with a sun in the sky and the number really big. And
This baffles me. This runs in my opinion, completely contrary to why the Echo is successful. It's successful because people don't.
Hold on. So what you're wearing now, what that looks like to me is there's a movie about a park that's not Disney because they can't use the Disney name.
Yeah, that's what this is.
What they have to do is create a hat that looks a little bit like the Mickey Mouse hat, but doesn't violate that intellectual property. Yeah. What is that?
It's actually a Disney hat. It's Oswald Rabbit.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. So,
Is that the predecessor?
No, it's a successor. But I think you're actually close to something. It may be, you know how sometimes when you register a domain name, you register all the domain names around it. Disney's plan is to keep those renegade parks from creating Mickey-like things by creating characters with every size ear, so that
So they can have the droopy ears, which are like
get them
goofy.
All. they get them all.
Yeah. Okay.
So no one can duplicate.
That's amazing.
This one has my name on it, though. I like to wear
it. Yeah, no, it's really nice.
but as I was saying, I think that this is, to me, more like Amazon nibbling the corners, nibbling the edges, saying, well, we got everything. Let's see what else we can get. Because honestly, the real reason old people who like country music use Echoes is they don't want to talk to their computer. They probably don't have a computer. And the radio show that I do definitely skews older because who the hell listens to radio? And they're always asking me about voice devices.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They love
it. I don't know. You know, talking to your computer is no less natural than talking to a speaker. I'm not saying it's something you should do instead of getting a speaker. I'm just saying if you wanted to just play around with this stuff, and I don't know who doesn't have a phone either, but I mean, this stuff can be available in all these places, and there are some advantages to a big screen. That's all.
Yeah, I guess I feel like we've been really skeptical about Microsoft's claims around Cortana and PC use. And now when these guys are coming in, I'm like, so what's going to be different?
So it's funny. Leo just, how did you say it? Nibbling around the edges or whatever.
Yeah. I
was wondering about that with Qualcomm, frankly, right? You own this dominant market.
Yeah. You own mobile. You got to look for mobile. Other places, right?
You're doing stuff with IoT. You're doing stuff with AI and VR. Why would you nibble around the edge? Because that's what the PC market's going to be to them, right?
Tech demands that you grow. The market says you got to grow or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like, you know, when Jeff Bezos started Amazon, he started with books because he saw that as the big market. But he had earmarked like 10 markets, and he was going to go down them in order and enter these new markets as he went. But eventually, you kind of run out of steam. You're running out of stuff. Like, so what's left over here? I guess what's left over here is the computer. You know, it's just... But there is a user base there.
Bezos is genius, and if he thinks it's a good thing, it's probably not an expensive thing for them to do. And I bet you some of the things he does, he just goes, well, let's see what happens.
I also think there's some Google has this in their DNA. I think Microsoft or Google, Apple does as well, and maybe Amazon does. It's this notion of let's keep Microsoft down, shall we?
Yeah. No, you're right.
I think there's an aspect.
Yeah, I mean,
to that.
It might be brand recognition, right? Because I've seen people who've seen this announcement
say,
"Oh, wow,
I
would love to get a PC with Alexa," but I'm like, "But would you ever use it?"
They don't know about Cortana. They don't even know.
No, they don't.
Well, but again, if you're using, you get a speaker, right? Using the device you already have.
Yeah.
And adding to that is useful. You know, at lunch today, my wife and I were watching TV, and I said something like, I don't remember the question anymore. I asked her a question like, I don't know where this lake is in the state. And she says, if only there was a way you could say, hey, Gene, and then whatever the question was. And we both laughed. And then all of a sudden the Google assistant we forgot was in the room piped up and said, the lake, blah, 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 is located.
See?
So it's not so much. Remember, in that case, we were literally asking what was a sort of a rhetorical question to nobody. We shared a laugh. Mm-hmm. And then from the sky, the answer just appeared. And I don't really think about it as I asked that little speaker because I forgot it was there, you know. And I don't think people have to think about it like they're asking their computer.
Yeah, no, that's the point.
It's part of a –
It's ambient computing. Yeah.
It becomes just part of the thing.
I was reading this column by this guy named Paul Thurrott. I'm a premium member of his site. And he said, if I'm reading this correctly, this is the quote, the Alexa Everywhere strategy, which is smart, will ultimately push Cortana further to the periphery – or what we might call Cortana Nowhere. I think that that's it. You're right.
It's good. It's also, by the way, good writing.
Well written.
Yeah.
What a great way to end.
Just go on.
Well, I think it's lucky they're already thinking about repositioning Cortana, as we talked about on a recent episode, where they're just trying to build it into things as an assistant.
I don't, you know, I think that Amazon's at the point, and you're going to see more of this from Amazon. I mean, look, they just said they're going to do health insurance. They just said they're going to do, what was it, house insurance?
Yeah.
They're at the point now where it's just like, well, what don't we have?
Bring it down to the Amazon tire store and get your tires retreaded.
What pie do we not have a piece of? Let's go.
They're just running
out
of stuff.
Yeah, they're literally running out of stuff.
I think, for a Microsoft guy and for Mary Jo, as someone who has followed Microsoft even longer than I have, anyone who is an enthusiast or whatever of the company, I think the hard thing is just the stuff we miss from the past, even though we might have kind of complained about some of the stuff, the overly aggressive strategy and direct competition with competitors, which just sounds so normal to me. Mm-hmm. You know, the new thing is just we get along with everybody. And you see Satya Nadella or Microsoft in general talking about Cortana in this case and how it's just going to work with everything and it's fine. It's Alexa's fine and Google Assistant's fine. Everything's fine. And you kind of just want them to, would you just punch someone in the face? Would you just compete? Like you're not even, you're just, it's like this kumbaya thing that's going on. And it's, I'm sure it's smart. It's obviously helped the stock a lot. But I just from the perspective of an observer, it's like, could you just push someone down once or...
I know.
You know,
I feel like that too. The other day I sent an email to somebody at Microsoft and I was asking for a comment on something and they gave me this namby comment that was just like, we love everyone and blah. And I just sent back a note and I said, could you please just fight them back again for a second?
Yeah.
That's funny. Paul's been saying that for years.
No, it's like, I'd like to buy the, no, stop. Just fight them.
Just remember, you know, people love Mick Jagger more than they love Pat Boone. Just remember. Right?
Yes. Right. And I would say the people who feel strongly about music or feel strongly about either of those people, there's more of them on the Mick Jagger side, and it's not coincidental.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
One last thing.
You don't have to be Larry Ellison. You don't have to be the evil villain.
Oh, God, he is hated. Oh, he is hated, though.
He is.
Microsoft used to be worse. You might have been at this event. It was a tech ed or something. The Google dolls were there. Microsoft paid for the Google dolls. But the opening act was that comedian. I've already forgot his name. Dennis Miller. And he came out, and this is back in the heyday of Microsoft. And he described Phil Gates as being a Cheshire cat in a monocle away from being a Bond villain, which is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. But he put also at a Microsoft event, which was so beautiful.
Even funnier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Intel's Courier. First of all, that name's taken.
It is. They don't call it Courier. Oh. They call it Tiger Rapids.
And that sounds like something out of Winnie the Pooh. What is that?
I don't know. Rivers in Oregon now?
It must be some river.
Oh, it's a river. Tiger Rapids. What is it?
Yeah, so they're showing this thing at Computex. It's a two-screen PC device that opens like a book, has a hinge. One side looks like a pad of paper. The other side could be a pad of paper, or it could be a keyboard with a little screen real estate. And it's a reference design that some other OEMs are looking at who want to build these dual-screen devices. And Paul will note, there is a pen loop on this thing.
Very nice.
The only interesting thing about it.
Yes. They said their competition for this is pen and paper. It's not other kinds of devices. And it looks a lot like the Courier that Microsoft never brought to market. It's like 7.9-inch LCD display. They say there's a Kaby Lake core processor inside. Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi built in. Undisclosed amount of memory, so we don't know that. But it just kind of shows you, everybody's thinking about this right now. We keep hearing Microsoft and Andromeda with the dual screen, and everybody's trying to figure out, what is the user base for this thing?
Did you see the market? Asus Precog?
Yep. I think that thing's too weird.
I did so.
Typing on glass is not good.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't like the name either.
No,
it's like that Minority Report movie, right?
Well, that's clearly where they're going, right? Yeah. So they showed this again at Computex. They've been talking about it for a while, though, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to really struggle over the next few years with these kind of weird hybrid devices until we find something that makes sense.
It's the same thing. It's nibbling at the edges. It's trying to find another.
It's like cars in the 1950s. You know, they went through these weird, you know, bubble tops and fins. And fins. They just try.
Yeah. It's chrome.
It's now we're in an episode position. Of Cuphead.
It's summertime. In Petaluma. Have you noticed? It's summertime.
I am never going to comment on your clothes again.
It's summertime.
You never can do that. You can't.
Oh, man.
Let's take a break. What do you say?
Let's
let Paul reclaim his senses.
Suitably chastened.
No. Paul, you just gave me an opening and I drove right in. Actually, you know why I'm happy? Because the mortgage world is undergoing a revolution, and it's about time. A technological reinvention of the way you get a home loan. That's why I'm happy. Now, I'm talking about Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country, both in volume and customer satisfaction. Number one, according to J.D. Power, 8 years in a row in mortgage origination, for the last 4 years in mortgage servicing. So you might say, well, they could just rest on their laurels. They're already beloved. But no, they said there's a better way. No more going to the bank. No more going to the attic to find paperwork. All you got to do is go to your phone and rocketmortgage.com/windows. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when buying a home or refinancing your existing home. You'll understand all the details. You'll know you're getting the right mortgage for you. And best of all, it's fast and it's easy. Everything you need, you've got in your hand, the palm of your hand. Their trusted partners mean you can share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage by just going, boom, touch of the button. You don't have to go to the attic to find pay stubs or bank statements. And it's fast. Rocket Mortgage performs thousands of calculations a second because computers, right? So in most cases, under 10 minutes. In other words, you could go to an open house, say, hey, honey, let's buy this house. She'll say, take the flower off first. And we'll make an offer. And I'll say, okay, but let me do this first. Go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. Within 10 minutes, you'll have approval. In most cases, based on income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's right for you. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage. .com/windows, rocketmortgage.com/windows.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, shoot.
I have to buzz someone in. Hold on.
Buzz someone in. Maybe there's something exciting being delivered. The UPS guy.
Do you think she'll share it with us?
Yeah, it depends. She might be like you, Paul. You always get these cool things and you never tell anybody you got them.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about this GitHub acquisition. Mm-hmm. And again, I think Ben Thompson did a great job explaining why it makes sense and why Microsoft was willing to pay a lot of money for a company that only raised a few hundred million and is struggling to stay profitable. And he points out Microsoft may never make any money with GitHub. It's just not set up that way.
Right. And that's part of the reason I think Microsoft is a good steward for this service.
You don't have to make money.
Yeah. It's not like when they bought Nokia and it's like we expect to sell X number of phones and we have this growth trajectory, blah, 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 whatever. No, it's really about hearts and minds and being part of that community. It's super important to the future of the company. I don't know about the price. I'm not sure what it's worth. I saw that number and I thought, that's kind of a big number. But I believe that Amazon and Google and other companies have been looking at it as well. And I'm sure that was part of it.
A lot of bids. A lot of bids.
Yeah.
But I think,
go ahead, Mary. I think it was CNBC who said Google actually did bid on it.
And Atlassian was looking at them. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is so for people who don't know what GitHub is, by now probably everybody does, but it's the place a lot of open source projects put their code for sharing. A lot of open source and other projects take submissions there. It's a way to coordinate multiple programmers. You know, it's a code repository, but it also has code review, has a lot of features. It's clear that Microsoft, this is part of their strategy to woo the developer community, particularly, I think, the open developer community yeah. to Microsoft. The problem yeah. is so many, I see so many people in the open community saying, I'm going to GitLab, which is one of the competing Git repositories. Had a huge spike.
I feel
spike.
Really bad for those people that they, I mean, even in our, not even, in our world, in the Windows community, we joke about this on the show, right? Microsoft will announce yet another Linux, blah, 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 whatever it is. And so I was like, oh, here we go again, you know. This has been going on for years. I mean, we're just joking now. I mean, we accept this. We understand it. It makes sense. But like I said earlier, I think there's this segment of the population out there, developers, maybe a higher percentage of them too. They haven't gotten the memo on the Microsoft thing. Mm. You know, this isn't the Microsoft.
No, we have long memories. And Microsoft under Ballmer was really the sworn enemy.
No, but I always use this example. You know, you don't blame Germany for World War II today.
Right.
You know, you don't.
No, but there's still people who won't buy Volkswagens.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the Dieselgate thing, that thing makes sense.
all the cabs in Tel Aviv are Mercedes-Benz. So there you go.
Yeah.
Right? Sure.
I mean, it's not, I saw some people saying, oh, I can't do it. Remember they called Linux a cancer. It's more deep seated than that. I mean, Microsoft was openly attacking open source. They were waging a patent war against them.
Yes. They were charging people.
They were. It was bad.
They could still be charging people. Has anyone ever come out and said, oh, by the way, Microsoft called and they said, you know, that licensing fee you've been paying us for the past 17 years, that's forgiven. You forget about it.
But you know what they do now, which is different. You know, you don't see. Remember, every week we would see a press release about a new company they were attacking for patents,
right.
And they were all Android.
Or
a
new
companies.
Agreement they reached with someone who didn't want to get sued because they were implementing some kind of Linux or Android based whatever.
Did you notice that stopped?
Yes. Oh, that's definitely stopped. Yeah.
I don't think Microsoft will ruin it.
No, I don't think they're going to ruin GitHub. I mean, they're one of the biggest users of GitHub.
Yeah, that's right. One of the concerns, though, some software developers have is that Microsoft might peek at their repository. I mean, this stuff's public anyway.
I don't know.
I think that's kind of strange.
Well, there is a whole part of GitHub that's private, right? And that's the part they charge people for. And you can have non-open source code in these private repositories. I mean, Amazon has repositories on GitHub. Google does. I mean, so people are like, oh, yeah, if you were a Microsoft competitor, would you put your code there? I don't know. Guys, they have rules they have to live by. That's why people aren't afraid to put, you know, really confidential data in things like OneDrive and SharePoint. There are rules. I mean,
your bank, whatever it is probably a lot less stringent about security controls on your online account than Microsoft is.
Right.
And a lot less sophisticated. This issue of trust, I can't help people with trust.
Yeah.
All you can do is look at Microsoft's record and see what they've done in the past, in this century. And
last 4 years.
Look at how the company has changed. And go to GitLab if you have to. But this has really surprised me.
It doesn't surprise me at all.
It didn't surprise me at all.
It feels like it's a 20-year-old argument. You know, it's...
Well, and I also have to think before Microsoft spent $7.5 billion that they almost certainly, more than thought about it, surveyed developers, right, and said, would you mind?
Yeah.
So they must think they know they're going to lose some people, but they must think most people
I feel like there's two camps, right? Like there's open source developers who are practical and they use open source because, you know, those tools are what they're familiar with and such. Then there's the FOSS camp, the free and open source people, the Richard Stallman people. Those guys are never going to like it. They're never going to go with
people.
It,
right?
They are people. FOSS users are people too.
Okay. Well, to be fair, the Free Software Foundation has never liked GitHub. Stallman continuously complained that GitHub was using open source code, not sharing back. Oh, no. GitHub is not beloved either.
I will give him credit for being consistent.
Yeah, he hates everything.
Consistently terrible, but consistent.
No, but among the hardcore, GitHub wasn't it either. But almost everybody I know used GitHub. I mean, that really was, that was the default.
Yeah. One of the really smart things Microsoft did in this, though, I think, is making Nat Friedman the CEO of GitHub. Because he's the CEO of Xamarin. And Xamarin, you know, it has its critics too, but I feel like he's young. People kind of associate him with wanting to be cross-platform and open, and I think he was a really good choice for picking somebody inside to be CEO.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, that's right.
So they're trying to do the right thing, I feel like. But you know what? Nat Friedman has said, and so has Satya Nadella, you know, we are going to have to earn your trust. All we can say is look at us now and look at us in the future and decide for yourselves if we're trustworthy. That's all they can do.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not your job or our job to promote it. It's just...
No.
I'm just noticing that there is some pushback, but I...
Oh, there's a lot of pushback.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. But I, like I said, I think they're going to do a really good job for this thing. I think they're going to be a positive.
You know, I see more and more people using Visual Studio and particularly Visual Studio Code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thompson says, and I think he's right, that the way you can win developers, since you can't win it by being a dominant platform, Microsoft App Store is not going to make anybody any money, but developers are very focused on tooling. And by providing great tooling, and by the way, Microsoft does some really good languages too.
That's a great point, by the way, that they don't have the dominant platform. That makes them trustable in this scenario.
That's a good
They're point. Not trying to direct you to this gigantic moneymaker. They may want to direct you to Visual Studio, but that thing's going to win on the quality of the product.
Right.
It's never going to be a humongous, money earner for Microsoft. That's a reason to support Microsoft buying GitHub, I think.
I think the opportunity is there, and all Microsoft has to do is continue to prove to developers that they're pro developer, pro open, which they are. I mean, I believe that they are.
No, they really are. Yeah.
They have to be these days. Yeah, they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
No. So I want to ask both you guys your opinion. So Electron is somehow tied up with GitHub too, right? I mean, is GitHub like the steward of Electron? Is that kind of how that works? Because now Microsoft kind of owns Electron.
Is that true?
I had heard this too, but I don't actually know.
I know. I was trying to find the exact relationship between GitHub and Electron. But that actually is an interesting thing because, Microsoft's been looking for more ways to get more apps into the store.
So it's maintained by GitHub. A lot of open source projects are supported by for-profit companies as a way to, because somebody has to pay for it.
It was created by GitHub, apparently.
Was it created by GitHub?
That's what I thought.
Well, that's interesting.
Right.
So did they just acquire Electron?
It says it's open source. It was created and is maintained by GitHub.
Right. Right. Which means the Electron project could move to someone else. I would guess they're being heavily wooed right now by Microsoft.
That would be a good concession for Microsoft to make as a little bone to throw to the FOSS community. Say, look, we know this is upsetting to you. We're not trying to kill Electron or do something terrible here. They don't need to own Electron.
They don't. I guess technically they don't.
It's not really owning it, but I don't know what to call it. I was like, they're the steward of it or something.
Yeah, that means they host it. They probably put money in it. Some of the Electron project members probably are GitHub employees.
Is it margarine or is it butter, Leo?
Chiffon. It's the lusty month of May. But I don't... Electron could move on. I mean, that happens all the time. And I bet you they're being wooed. That's interesting. I didn't think of that.
Oh, and here's another point that I've seen kind of misreported around the web. GitHub, I've seen people say GitHub was running on AWS. Not true. GitHub runs their own data center and hosts their own data and has their own cloud, as does GitLab, by the way. So I've seen people reporting GitLab runs on Azure. Nope, it used to, but it doesn't anymore. Both of these are independently run private data
GitLab
centers.
Is kind of interesting because a lot of people just host their own GitLab instance. And one of the things GitLab's, because it's open source code as well. One of the things people are interested in with GitLab is maybe federating all the privately owned hosting into a larger GitLab. There's also Bitbucket. The Wikimedia Foundation has their own repository. There's a lot. And of course, a lot of people run their own. I use a Git that's an encrypted Git from Keybase that's self-hosted. Mm-hmm. I guess it's not really, but it's encrypted. I don't know.
Yeah, I think GitHub has something similar. They have GitHub Enterprise, which is like you can run a GitHub instance inside your own firewall.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of the GitHub code is proprietary. It is not fully open.
I don't know. I think it was a good buy and a smart buy for Microsoft. They paid a lot of money for it, but let's see if they can keep it. The developers.
They can afford it.
Yeah. I mean,
they can afford it.
They've had, Nokia was a wash. They spent a lot on LinkedIn. I don't think that's working out, frankly, financially, but I just feel like this has less of a need to directly make that, make money. I think it just makes sense for them. They use GitHub. I mean, this is central to their whole internal development thing too. So
one thing Microsoft does get is the Electron based code editor, Atom.
Wow, really?
Yeah, huh. that is owned by GitHub.
That's interesting.
Somebody's saying, and I think this is true in the chat room, that in the process of developing Atom, they had to create Electron. So maybe they do own it.
Isn't Visual Studio Code based on Electron? Isn't that how they did the cross-platform?
Yeah. And so, code looks just like Atom. So I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say Microsoft may not need Atom and Visual Studio Code, so perhaps could be something they really spin off. Give it back. Give it to the community, whatever.
Give it back.
That's
here,
a good
take
thing.
This back.
Do that. No, give it to the community. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, fascinating. Yeah, unexpected, fascinating. Although, I think if you're a pragmatist in the open source community, what you should probably say is GitHub was losing money and may not have been long for this world. It's a good thing that Microsoft saved them.
I think it might literally be the best thing, of the available choices. I think this might be the best choice. And I just think there's that element, those people, maybe in the FOSS community, whatever it is, that don't have a hard time accepting Microsoft as it is today. Period. They don't understand this
just
yet.
Any Microsoft is bad. So,
but I feel like they're going to, I think a lot of them will come around to this. I think this is going to work out.
Good. Redstone Fumph. Windows.
Actually, we add this to the notes. I don't even know because it was a build today too.
Another added it.
Yet another one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Builds roll along. I saw Paul made fun of what I highlighted in last week's build, but then I think you came around.
What did I make fun of?
Last week there was Redstone 5.17.6.8.2. And so my headline was Microsoft makes remote server administration tools available on demand in latest Redstone 5 build. And Paul was like, oh, finally. Dude, was huge.
No, I'm sorry. You misunderstood me then. Because the problem with RSet is that every time a new version of Windows comes out, Microsoft would eventually release that version of RSet that mapped to it. Then you would have to go get it, re-download and reinstall it on your computer. Now what's happening is if you install it, go ahead. I'm sorry. I wasn't making fun of it.
Really?
No, this is something.
I see why. Okay.
I'm not usually sarcastic, so I'm not sure where that came from.
You're never sarcastic, so I don't know why I thought that, but.
I recognize that this is an important thing.
Okay, good. Because I think this is like, and when I wrote about it, all the IT pros were like, oh, thank God, finally.
It's you.
Right. So there's going to be a list of user selectable RSAT tools that are, I would assume, going to be part of Redstone 5. And so you won't manually have to download RSAT every time you upgrade. You'll just have this list and check off the ones you want.
Yeah.
Nice. A useful feature. A good feature.
It's really big. Actually, with every version of Windows that used to come out back in the day, Microsoft completes Windows, whatever it's called, and you'd start getting pings from people. Do you know when they're going to release the RSAT for this version?
Always.
Every time. And every time. It was just something you had to manually keep track of. And now it's in the Windows features list or whatever. Once you check it off, it's on. And as you get upgraded, it gets upgraded with you.
It's smart.
It's the way it should have always been.
Yep. Then there were a couple other smaller things, like they're updating the tab page and sets, so it's more obvious that this is where you launch apps. I think that's good, actually, because I think most normal people won't figure that out just by looking at that. What else is in there? Anything else? The wireless projection experience being optimized. So there's different modes for wireless projection now, game mode, video mode, or productivity mode, and it can adjust appropriately for what you're doing if you're remotely projecting your screen.
It gets that toolbar at the top, like a remote desktop has, where you can configure it as you go. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I like seeing these are the kind of updates I think will that could win people over who've been doubtful about feature updates. Like these are things you go, yeah, that's useful, right?
You know, right. So every time they release a new build, I clench up a little bit because I'm waiting for that betrayal that is going to come. But so far, it's been a distinct lack of nonsense features and just like really useful, often productivity focused stuff. Yep. And none of it is super sexy and none of it is, you know, something you could throw up on a slide. It would be pretty or whatever for the most part. But it's super important that they do this stuff because often this is where Microsoft kind of falls apart a little bit. And it's nice to see them doing this.
Yeah. And then today's build, 17686, I was looking through the list. They have a new change in the microphone settings around privacy so that if access to the microphone has been disabled in your privacy settings, we will pop up a notification the first time you attempt to use the microphone and let you know it's blocked. Some smaller things around mixed reality. And I guess there's a dark mode for File Explorer that finally is getting darker.
Dark mode!
Woo!
Oh, boy. Well,
they're just playing catch up with Apple at this point.
Actually, Leo. Yes, they are.
No.
Yeah. They are.
No, come on. Okay, this is one of the things I said during the Apple event, is that every other operating system has had theming for
years. Yeah, I made a joke
about
it. Yep, except for one thing.
What's that?
I used it, and it's excellent.
Oh,
and it's way better than what Microsoft has in Windows 10. It's not even close.
Really?
This is actually a huge problem. Mary Jo, you might want to grab your gong. This would be the appropriate time.
time for gong.
Dark mode in Windows 10 is terrible and it's inconsistent. And it's terrible in so many ways. It's hard for me to even try to describe it. So I'll just give you a couple highlights. It's black, not dark, for one thing. It's just black. It only impacts some of the store apps that are in the system and the system itself, not all of them. It doesn't impact any of the desktop applications like File Explorer, which is why they're trying to fix it for the next version. Some applications are not tied into it. So when you go into the settings app and it's personalization colors, you'll see a setting in there called app mode for some reason, not theme like I think most people would think of it. And they have a light app mode, which is the default, which is white. And they have a dark app mode, which you can switch to, which is black. And when you do that, only some stuff goes black. File Explorer, again, doesn't. Microsoft Edge doesn't. And this is the problem. So let's say you want to use dark mode at night because it's easier in your eyes, maybe combined with the night light feature or whatever. And you switch from light mode to dark mode. Well, it only switches some of the stuff. You have to go into the apps that you're using and make the change. It's stupid.
Yeah.
If you look at the way Apple did it, first of all, it's the whole system. Secondly, it looks beautiful. Like graphically, it's not black. It's dark.
It's dark. Yeah.
It's dynamic. If you want it to be, it will actually get darker as the night goes on. It can change the background and the UI elements to kind of go with the time.
That's
kind of
cool.
Based on the system time.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, for third party apps, obviously they'll have to build, but that's, of course they will. Right.
And I mean, they're putting that in Xcode. There's a set.
Yeah. It's a feature. It's probably a checkbox. Yeah. Support dark mode, whatever. So I joked about it at the time. I said, oh, look, you know, inspired by every single other operating system on earth. But the truth is the way that Apple is doing it is dramatically better and more sophisticated than the way Microsoft's doing it. And this goes back to that finish the job thing I always complain about with Microsoft, where they put out this half-baked piece of junk. And by the way, speaking of inconsistent, like I said, it's called an app mode. If you look it up in settings, when you go into Edge to change from light mode to dark mode, they call it a theme there. It's a theme. They use different terms. If you look up theme and settings for the system is something completely different. It's called app mode. I just, these kinds of things, this is what makes me nuts. This is why I'm insane. It's this kind of stuff. Like and to see Apple like belatedly for sure and add this functionality to their operating system, but then completely nail it on the first try is frustrating.
It's like How much more black could this be? And the answer is none. None.
Is that good?
More black.
It's black mode.
Yep.
Goes to 11.
It's aggravating. The other thing I brought up this week, just from an inconsistency standpoint, you can all look at this yourselves. Mary Jo uses Notepad every single day. When you run Notepad, you'll notice looking down at the taskbar that icon is from Windows Vista. It's a glass Notepad. Ugh. The cover of the Notepad is glass. Ugh. It's also angled like Windows icons used to be. I don't know what the angle is, but it's kind of looking off to the side. All the new icons are all flat. There's no glass anymore. We got rid of glass three versions
ago.
That
is one thing Apple does well, I have to say.
Yeah, and I just – it's this level of not paying attention to the details is probably my central frustration with Microsoft. They're always forging on to the next thing. It's a kind of a cultural problem. Thank you for not gonging.
You know, want to hear something? I use Notepad every day.
You didn't
You're
notice.
Describing the icon. I'm like looking down. I'm notice. Like, oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. You didn't
yeah,
know. I knew
look
that.
At that.
I knew Mary Jo had no idea what you're talking
I'm like,
about.
Like, Notepad, it's a square piece of paper. Looks like a notepad.
Yeah, great. Right. And actually, Micah Sargent, who is a Apple guy, works for Mobile Nations, was complaining about the dark mode Apple Notes app. He says, They have a new dark mode paper that he says it looks like oatmeal. He hates it.
Okay. So that's a very specific complaint. We have a file explorer that isn't dark. So we have slightly bigger issues here.
One more thing, Mr. T. I have a feeling this is him. Is this yours? The Groove?
It is,
Microsoft
it is.
Killing Groove on Android?
Oh, no. Yeah, this is this to me is not a big deal. I mean, Microsoft got rid of Groove Music Pass last year. They stopped selling songs in the store. They pushed people to Spotify, which is not necessarily a great choice for what I see as the typical Groove user, which is someone who kind of came up in the Microsoft realm and they went, you know, they were in Zune maybe and they went to Xbox Music and then they were on Groove and they put music in OneDrive and maybe they use the service as well and they can mix and match those songs. One of the problems with moving to Spotify for those guys is it's actually a lot more difficult to use your own songs plus the songs that are in the service. You can kind of do it on a device by device basis and there are workarounds for it for sure. But there are services out there. iTunes Match does this. Google Play Music does this for free, by the way, that allow you to upload your own music to the cloud and then access it from any device. And so my tip for these people who started complaining all of a sudden, here we go, Microsoft's killing more stuff, is just use Google Play Music already, for crying out loud. Like, if your goal is to...
That's capitulation. That's
like,
just...
yeah, like, well, in other words, I'm too cheap to pay for anything, but I would like all my music to be up in the cloud. Well, Google has that service. It's called Google Play Music. Just use it. It works great, by the way. Yeah. And if you want to pay for the service, they have that too. And you can mix and match. And that's actually what I do. So my solution to the Groove problem was to use Google Play Music. I, you know, did that, I don't know, a year and a half ago, a long time ago, whatever it was. But you could, if you're an Apple guy, Apple Music with iTunes Match supports this functionality. If you're an Amazon person, literally in April, they killed it. They used to do the same thing.
I know,
for,
it's too bad. I loved that.
I think it was $24 a year or something like that. You could upload some number, I don't know, 200,000 song, whatever it was. It's gone. So Google, free,
I feel like this is going to go away everywhere, mainly because who has, people's collections are going to get less and less important in a streaming world where you just get everything.
Yeah, but this is the demographic that wants to talk to the computer. You know, it's like
the old guys. Well, country.
Music CDs.
I have no problem paying for a music subscription service. The issue I have is that there are songs I really like that are still not in those services, and so the ability to upload the couple of songs that, or whatever it is, a couple hundred songs maybe that they don't have is huge for me. So like I can mix and match, which I do, like I said, in Google Play Music. I love that. I'm not going to upload my music and use that instead of what's in Google Play Music. Like I'll always use their versions. It's probably higher quality at this point. I probably rip these things to 160K MP3 files in, I don't know, 1979 or whenever it was, a long time ago.
Let's take a break. Back of the book coming up next. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, and I'm Sia. Just call me Sia.
Oh boy, on a special emo episode of Windows Weekly.
I think we need to wear some hats now.
You can go get your hats while I talk about Moogsoft. If you're an IT professional, you know there's one thing that just makes that on-call thing a pain, and it's all those alerts, the pachinko machine in your head, all those alerts coming in at once. And it's impossible to even know, what do I do? How do I act on it? It can really freeze you up. When all those alerts and tickets light up your monitor like a Christmas tree, you're not being productive. You're just being stressed out. No mere mortal can analyze all those alerts and respond to all those tickets and do something intelligent. That's why you got to get Moogsoft AI Ops. You can immediately reduce the noise with Moogsoft AI Ops. It's an algorithmic IT ops platform that reduces your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% guaranteed. We're talking with Greg Farrow of the Packet Pushers Network on Sunday about this. He said, this is an example of where AI really is meaningful. Analyzing computers and what's going on with them and figuring it out what to do. So even though when I say AI, Moogsoft AI Ops, I'm not talking artificial intelligence, I'm talking algorithmic IT ops. Really, there is AI, there is machine learning involved in cutting down the number of alerts and tickets by 99%. And by the way, it works with all your existing IT tools. Of course, it has to, right? It's patented technology. It correlates the events into what they call situations, basically actionable work items, so you can focus on tackling the stuff that matters to you. I have a case study, HCL Technologies. You may know them from their award-winning Dry Ice platform. They're a global IT managed service provider. The Dry Ice platform has, as its event management layer, Moogsoft AI Ops. And HCL says that's helped clients streamline operational workflows, reduce time in the detect-to-correct lifecycle of incident tickets. In fact, a 33% reduction in mean time to restore. One-third less time. That makes you a lot more effective. So you could support more customers with service quality and keep operational costs low and efficiency high. You're going to love it, and I want you to try it. Get your boss to do it. If it's not you or if you're the decision maker, go to Moogsoft.com. Get a demo, Moogsoft, Moogsoft.com for Moogsoft AI Ops. Reduce your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% right now. Moogsoft, Moogsoft.com. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Oh, now we're talking. Is that for the royal wedding, Mary Jo? Is that?
It is.
That's beautiful. Did you wear that?
It's my fascinator.
It is. It's very fascinating.
For the record, I asked my daughter if we still have that gigantic Mexican hat thing, the sombrero, whatever.
Yeah, you got a Chevy's. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we lost it in the move. So,
darn.
I tried.
How do you live in a world without hats?
I know.
As you can tell, I am not.
I have a Red Sox hat I could wear.
That's good. Yeah, I have a panda hat that I can now wear again because we got Panda back from the Red Sox. I'm talking Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah, you can keep him.
Yeah. Here's the tip of the week with Paul Thurrott.
Trade Pablo Sandoval is my tip of the week. I lost my page for this. So Microsoft, where is it? It must be right here.
Games are gold for June.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Microsoft is having a humongous Xbox sale that starts, I want to say, tomorrow.
Ooh.
So we don't have the complete list of stuff, but all the Xbox consoles and bundles are going to be $50 off. That means for the first time, an Xbox One X console, not a bundle, will be on sale. That's kind of interesting. So $449 for that. Games will be anywhere up to, I don't know what the bottom level is, but up to 75% off. And it will include some games that have never been on sale, like PUBG and Sea of Thieves and so forth. So there's a bunch going on there. That's something to look forward to starting on Thursday this week. And it runs through, I think it runs through E3. I think it's like an E3 focused sale. And then, yes, it is the beginning of June. So we have a new set of four games for Xbox Games with Gold on Xbox One. It's Assassin's Creed Chronicles Russia.
I didn't even know about that one.
I know. Well, so this isn't one of the major Assassin's Creed games. It's like one of the mobile type games. Yeah, there's a bunch. There's actually a bunch of those. I'd never even heard of this myself. On the Xbox 360, it's like Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transform. That's a $30 game for free. So grab that stuff, and then there'll be two more at the middle of the month. And then we have Xbox Game Pass, right? So every month new games are added to the Game Pass, which has over 100 games in the catalog. Wasteland 2 Director's Cut is in there. Mega Man Legacy Collections 2, MotoGP 17. Some really good stuff. And separate from that, where is this announcement? They added four Star Wars games too. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Lego Star Wars, The Complete Saga. And then the first two, the only two, I think, Force Unleashed games. I believe I actually finished the first of those. But those are cool. So that's some good stuff there for the Xbox.
Nice.
And is that everything? I guess it is everything. Yeah. And then App Pick, a couple things here. Google at I.O. in some session, they never said this on in the keynote, but they said that, yeah, we're gonna bring all of our major services to PWA. And that's really interesting because that means, for the Microsoft fans in the audience, that they could potentially be available in the store. The first that – remember last week we talked about Google Chrome and the settings you can change in about flags.
I'm seeing it because yeah. I did modify mine.
Yeah. So if you do that and you go to Google Photos, you'll see there's an install option.
Yeah.
Now, the Google Photos – this was done specifically for the desktop. So if you did this on your phone, you're not going to get things like back up my photos to Google Photos. Like you still need the mobile app for that. But what this is really for is desktop platforms. So Chrome OS, obviously, but also Windows and the Mac, where you want to run this thing as an app. And so it's not going to back up your photos. This is literally the website as it looks now. It doesn't have offline viewing and so forth. But by making it a PWA, they could now go in and start adding PWA specific.
Fantastic.
Features and also platform specific features too, if they want to, like native notifications and so forth. So that's kind of cool.
I am getting more and more excited about this. I just really am.
Yeah. It's funny because in some ways it's not happening quite as quickly as I thought it was going to, but it's happening. And then on the mobile side, Microsoft has released two updates to its existing apps that add Microsoft Family features to Android for the first time. Microsoft Family is, of course, Microsoft's parental control service. Today, it works across Windows 10 and Xbox One. The system is much more pervasive on those platforms, for sure. But they're starting to roll out stuff on mobile non-Microsoft mobile for the first time. So the two that they've released so far are an update for Microsoft Launcher, which is the Microsoft home screen that you can get for Android, that adds children's location and app usage activity, right? So if your child has an Android phone, you put the Microsoft Launcher on it, you can see that stuff in the central dashboard in Microsoft Family. And then also site blocking in Microsoft Edge for Android. I assume that's coming to iOS as well. And that's the ability to, from a central location, specify apps that they can explicitly go to, like a whitelist, or I should say websites that they can't go to, like a blacklist. That will work now on Edge across Windows 10, I believe Xbox One, and now on Android as well.
And here's MSN Kids.
And MSN Kids, right. So the MSN Kids being a hopefully less ad-tastic version of the MSN homepage, it might be worth trying that out.
We should
out
all
yourself.
Use it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was just thinking, yeah.
Yeah, no ads, yeah.
Well, there'll be like Pikachu ads or something. I don't know. Hopefully there are no ads.
It's not little kids. I mean, there's a lot of sports.
Mm-hmm.
It's like middle school and high school, isn't it?
It's like a more respectful version of the web. It's not like you're not going to believe what this celebrity did, you know, and then you go to one of those pages. It's like a list of things with multiple pages.
Yeah. Designer shoes that look like desserts.
It's
a shoe cake.
Yeah. It's nice.
Shoe bakery makes each one by hand. Nice. All right. See, I like it. We've got a new feature segment on the show we're all excited about. Mary Jo Foley.
Yep. Eddie Van Laporte.
My man.
What? Yeah.
Mary Jo Foley is going to do our reorg tip of the week.
There's so many reorgs lately. We might as well start doing this, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of March, Microsoft had a pretty big reorg. Terry Myerson announced leaving, split the Windows business in two parts. And at the time, both Paul and I were like, yeah, there's going to be more shoes to drop from this reorg. So shoe number two has dropped. In last day of May, Microsoft started kind of fixing the reorg that they did, taking some of the people who got put under Scott Guthrie's organization and bringing them back over to the Windows side under Joe Belfiore and Brad Anderson, and then kind of doing the opposite, taking some of the people who were under this new Rajesh Jha part of Microsoft, where Joe Belfiore sits, and dispersing them to the winds of cloud and enterprise. So the biggest thing that happened is part two is Kudo Sonoda, who is this guy heading up what was called Next, New Experiences and Technology. His group has been disbanded, and he is now, quote, looking for a new role at the company. So a lot of the people who were working for him, like Chris Pratley, who did the new Photos experience in Windows, Lorraine Bardeen, who was running some of the HoloLens experience stuff, they're all kind of moving into new groups. And Kudo Sonoda, we don't know if he'll stay or go, but yeah, that's kind of the biggest part of the reorg. Windows Insider team was under Scott Guthrie's organization, now moved back under Joe Belfiore. And the design team under Albert Shum, who was doing the design for Windows and Windows devices, back from Scott Guthrie to Joe Belfiore. So it's kind of like a cleanup of round one. No layoffs so far, but both Paul and I think there's going to be layoffs coming.
Also big maybe for Joe B, right? He's getting a lot. He's going.
Joe's getting a lot of stuff.
He's going places. Yeah,
he is. Yep.
Fortunately, I happen to have a Joe B wig.
No, it's not blonde enough.
I know. This is the old Joe B.
You need some blonde.
It's the old black hair Joe B.
That might be Alex Kipman wig if you had some beard to go with it.
I can get that. We can do that. Paul, I like what you're doing there. I like where you're going with that.
Look, I'm a YouTube jerk.
Street thug. Super
I'm
annual.
Like Steve Buscemi in that with the skateboard.
How do you feel about country music?
Yeah,
I don't like
how
country
do you
music.
Feel?
Oops.
Now we're going to do Project Natick. He comes Project Natick.
Yeah, see, he needs his Red Sox hat because we're doing a Boston
code name. Go Bo Sox. Yeah.
Yep. Codename pick,
New York.
Project Natick. Project Natick is the name of a Microsoft data center that they're submerging underwater to see if that could be a way to do data.
Very interesting.
I know. Click on that first link and you'll see all the crazy pictures of what it looks like. It actually has the Microsoft flag on the end of this like thing that looks like a, I don't know, what do you call that? Bathysphere?
they're sinking this
the
into
water.
The
That's
water.
Where they're going to put GitHub.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that thing, though. But it looks like a rocket ship, kind of.
The idea is,
I like
is
that there's a Microsoft logo on it.
Cooling is one of the big issues with energy consumption on a network center.
Yeah.
So if you're in the ocean,
it should automatically cool, right?
Right.
You would think. So phase one, they already talked about with Project Natick. As of today, they're in phase two, which is a year of testing the environment. Economic and logistic impact of having this thing underwater.
It's off the coast of Scotland.
It is.
You can imagine these Scottish people going, what are they crazy? What are they doing? They're burying our center out there. That's nuts. Wow.
Sorry.
Yeah. So it's just, it's like a capsule full of servers, like hundreds of servers. That's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not much bigger than a container truck, you know, like a container ship container.
Yep.
And you know, was it Facebook? I think was putting network op centers in containers. So maybe it was Google that was doing that. I can't remember.
Yep.
So yeah, off the coast of San Francisco, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Now I presume they have a big long plug. you got to plug it in.
Yeah.
This thing is waterproof, right?
Yeah,
this thing better be waterproof, right?
As it goes in the water.
Project Natick. I love it.
Dope.
It goes. It's going down. Oh, there's the big long plug. Oh, right on the seafloor.
It's a bold move.
They better hope Nessie doesn't find it.
Yeah, right.
I love the Windows logo right there on the side.
I know,
that's
right?
That's awesome. I guess it's the Microsoft logo. All right. Fascinating Mary Jo Foley has a beer for us.
I do. So this weekend in New York City, there is a huge sour beer festival for anybody who's here who's a sour beer fan.
Yes.
WhereTheWildBeersAre.com. You can still get tickets. It's going to be awesome. It's like a giant bottle share, only sour beers. And so the pick had to be a sour beer. The pick today is Firestone Walker's beer called Creaky Bones. And what this is, just right is a Flanders Red style beer, which is kind of a fruity but yet quite sour beer, aged in oak with sour cherries. So it's cherries and oak and red, and it's sour, but it's not so sour that you feel like you're drinking vinegar. It's good. 5.7%. You can drink more than one if you can stomach more than one sour beer. Get your Tums out. Bring some Tums with you and get some Creaky Bones.
Creaky Bones.
Yeah, you know Firestone Walker. They're based in Southern California, and they make some really excellent dark beers mostly. So this is one of their first, if not their first, sour beer.
Nice. So the name is kind of a take on, like, Creek is kind of a sour cherry name, right? Like a, yeah.
Oh, Creek I is get for it. Cherry.
Yep. Oh, it's for cherry. Okay, because I often see that with sour beers. Like, it will say Creek. Must be just cherry.
Yep.
Love it. Are you going to where the wild beers are?
I am. I will be there.
June 9th.
June 9th. It's in Bushwick in Brooklyn, and it's a giant bottle share. It's really fun. It's like a...
What's
like
a bottle share? What does that mean?
It's like everybody who comes brings bottles of rare and unusual sour beers, and they open them, and you can get a little pour and, try out other people's beers.
So will you bring
some
beer?
It's like a community event. Yeah, I will bring some.
Some Mary Jo Foley brewed or something?
I haven't been brewing it lately, so I'll bring a bottled sour of some sort.
So it's like a potluck for beer.
It kind of is. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
How fun is that?
It'll be good.
How fun has this been? Let me tell you.
I was woefully unprepared for the hat day.
I'm glad Paul told me to take off that sweater and live life.
And you're doing it.
And I'm doing it big. I'm Joe Bunny Belfiore saying thanks for joining us on Windows Weekly. We do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by, we'd love to see you. You can watch it live at twit.tv/live. You can even be in studio if you wish. We have a visitor from PA, from your neck of the woods, Philly.
What? Oh, Philly.
Yeah. Not the lower Mackenzie Valley. I've heard of that place. The big city. Fred came by to say hi. If you want to join us, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. Fred's been helping me pick hats.
Nice.
Yes. if you can't watch live, and if you are watching live, do join the chat room. Great bunch of people in there. irc.twit.tv. Now, if you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand versions of everything we do. That's easy enough. Go to twit.tv, the website, and in this case, twit.tv/WW, or use your favorite podcast application and subscribe. And that way you'll get every episode the minute it's available. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott's website is thurrott.com, and his books are at leanpub.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.